namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Text 34 through 36. I'll read the first two here. Sarve pada palashaksha pita kausheya vasana kiritina kundalino lotasa pushkaramalina sarve cha nutna vayusa sarve charu chaturbhuja danur nisangasi gada shankha chakra chakram bhuja shriya. And please repeat. Disho viti miraloka kurvanta svena tejasa kim artam dharma palasya kinkaran no nishedata dishoviti miraloka kurvanta svena tejasa kimartam dharma palasya kinkaranno nishedata dishoviti miraloka kurvanta svena tejasa kimartam dharma palasya kinkaranno nishedata dishoviti miraloka kurvanta svena tejasa kimartam dharma palasya kinkaranno nishedata. Translation. The order carriers of Yamaraj said, "Your eyes are just like the petals of lotus flowers. Dressed in yellow silken garments, decorated with garlands of lotuses, and wearing very attractive helmets on your heads and earrings on your ears, you all appear fresh and youthful. Your four long arms are decorated with bows and quivers of arrows, and with swords, clubs, conch shells, discs, and lotus flowers. Your effulgence has dissipated the darkness of this place with extraordinary illumination. Now, sirs, why are you obstructing us?" Purport. Before even being introduced to a foreigner, one becomes acquainted with him through his dress, bodily features, and behavior, and can thus understand his position. Therefore, when the Yamadutas saw the Vishnudutas for the first time, they were surprised. They said, "By your bodily features, you appear to be very exalted gentlemen. You have such celestial power that you have dissipated the darkness of this material world with your own effulgence. Why then would you endeavor to stop us from executing our duty?" It will be explained that the Yamadutas, the order carriers of Yamaraj, mistakenly considered Ajamil sinful. They did not know that although he was sinful throughout his entire life, he was purified by constantly chanting the holy name of Narayana. In other words, unless one is a Vaishnava, one cannot understand the activities of a Vaishnava. The dress and bodily features of the residents of Vaikuntha Loka are properly described in these verses. The residents of Vaikuntha, who are decorated with garlands and yellow silken garments, have four arms holding various weapons. Thus they conspicuously resemble Lord Vishnu. They have the same bodily features as Narayana, because they have attained the liberation of Swarupya, but they nonetheless act as servants. All the residents of Vaikuntha Loka know perfectly well that their master is Narayana or Krishna, and that they are all his servants. They are all self-realized souls who are Nitya Mukta, everlastingly liberated. Although they could conceivably declare themselves Narayan or Vishnu, they never do so. They always remain Krishna conscious and serve the Lord faithfully, such as the atmosphere of Vaikuntha Loka. Similarly, one who learns the faithful service of Lord Krishna through the Krishna consciousness movement will always remain in Vaikuntha and have nothing to do with the material world. Many very nice points here. Here we see that the Yamadutas are very bewildered that by the dress, by their behavior, gentle behavior, their pleasant voices, and their effulgence, they're thinking, now these are elevated personalities. These are not ordinary personalities. So then how is it that such elevated personalities would be seemingly going against the rule of dharma? The dharma of the Yamadutas is to collect the sinful people and take them to Dharmaraj, who is the Lord of Dharma. Dharma means performance of prescribed duties, that we have our position, our social position, and we follow the proper etiquettes of our position, and by so doing, we become purified and advance on our way back to Godhead. So any gentle, trained person would not get in the way or obstruct anybody else's performance of duties. Only a very uncultured, uncouth, untrained person would ever think of doing such a thing. So the Yamadutas are a little surprised that here we're doing our duty, we've been doing like this, you know, as long as we can remember. And you look at this Ajamil, you know, husband of a prostitute, so many children, he kills people, he steals, he does all kinds of nasty things to maintain himself. So naturally, he is a perfect candidate for going to Yamaraj. So how would these highly elevated persons stand in the way of our performance of our duties? This is their dilemma, or their bewilderment. So we see here that an elevated person knows what is dharma. This is actually elevated. Because we see they take the dress and like this, the behavior, then they understand that this must have a certain highly elevated consciousness. So different from the modern concept of culture that simply if you look good outside, you must be nice. And there's no one thinks that you must have good character. Like that. So we understand that how one is behaving is because of proper character. One behaves properly is because one's character is good. One doesn't behave properly is because character is not good. This is the basic element that's here. So the Yamadutas, they're trained by Yamaraj. They're not fools. And the Vishnudutas, they are very well trained. So then this point comes up. So now that is the answer of this point will come in the next few verses. You know, that the real religion is devotional service. So this will not be discussed here. Now another point that comes up we see is the Yamadutas are performing their activities. Right? It is not necessarily very pleasant. They're basically, in-house gundas. Yamaraj has work to do, and that kind of work cannot necessarily be overly pleasant. You want to take people from their bodies, take them to the hellish regions. Who wants to go, right? You go out on the street and say, okay, how many people here want to see the Yamadutas? You know, show them a picture of what they look like, and they're going to drag you off to hell and you're going to suffer and all that. Please raise your hand. You know, we want to take a few names here. No one will raise their hand. Right? Like that. So, therefore, it's not that people are going willingly. They have to come with their dogs and their chains and all this and that and drag them off and take them away. So it's not very nice work. So they're doing this work. Now while they're doing this work, even though it is such a rough work, we do notice that they are still properly behaved gentlemen. They may not look like gentlemen. The work they're doing may not be so gentle, but that's what's available. You know, if you're stuck on the lower planets, you know, in Petri Loka or someplace, and no one sends you any pinda, after a while you get kind of hungry and you get a little lonely. And so you leave anybody too long getting hungry and lonely, and they start to go a little strange. You know? We see if somebody's very disturbed, their features distort, everything distorts. So that's what's happened to these Yamadutas. These are just people who no one took care of them. Their dynasty never took care of them. And with time, they became all demented and weird and all these kind of things. So after a long time of this, you know, not eating and all that, then Yamaraj takes them on as servants, as Yamadutas. So in this way, then they get a share of others' pindas. So they eat, and they have some work to do. So they're not unemployed. They're not making too much trouble. So it's understood by those who are good administrators and who know the religious principles that sometimes you have a class of people who don't know how to behave properly so well. They're a little strange in that. So you engage them in these kind of activities. But under no circumstances can they be badly behaved. This is very important. So even though we've been sent to do some rough work, if we meet other devotees and they ask us what is going on or this or that, if we then in the same way feel we have the right to deal with them roughly, then we do not understand one iota about dharma, about proper activity. We don't know. We are just uncultured street people. And we should stay on the street. Or as Prabhupada would say, stay in the jungle. Cities are for civilized people, means who know dharma. And the jungles are for people who do not know dharma. So we have to be very careful that no matter what we are doing, they are working for Yamaraj, the Lord of dharma. But they still do not have the right to roughly deal with anybody that is not within their jurisdiction. Ajamil has died. He's within their jurisdiction, at least seemingly so. We will even find that's incorrect. But the Vishnudutas and anybody else coming by is absolutely out of their jurisdiction. So because we have the right in one area does not mean we have the right in another. So we have to be very careful in understanding what is actually our dharma. And we see here that that someone is coming and caring about the situation. It means they've contemplated, they've seen, and they've taken the trouble to try to understand. So that must be accepted and must be seen. So we see the Yamadutas, being proper servants of Yamaraj, have taken this into consideration and are now discussing very properly with them. Though they still want to know, because we're dealing with dharma, which is coming from the Shastra given by Guru, the Guru is Yamaraj, accepted and followed by all the sadhus. So they want to see some good reasons why the Vishnudutas are getting in their way. Now, here, this has been one side. So we see Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, his glory is the balance point. We have a razor blade, it's called spiritual life, and it's exactly in the middle. And one who follows this path down the middle goes straight back to Godhead. One who veers to the right or the left ends up in sentimentalism or in impersonalism. And so Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas are the perfect balance. You'll never find them support an off-balanced opinion. even though it may seem right, even though many people may say, yes, we agree. But if it doesn't agree with Guru Sadhana Shastra, Prabhupada will never agree with it. He'll never support it. Because spiritual life is a razor's edge. It's not our feelings. It's not what we make up as our own religious principles. It's not what someone else may make up, but it's what is given to us by Krishna through the acharyas. So here we see in this same purport, he deals very nicely correcting those who are performing their duties. That they are performing their duties, but they have to behave properly in performance of those duties. And they have to behave properly with others in their performance of duties. Otherwise, they're not proper devotees. At the same time, someone who is in a position of authority, like in this situation, the Vishnu Dutas are in the position of authority. Because in actuality, Ajamil is their man, not the Yamadutas. If he was the Yamadutas' man, the Vishnu Dutas would just be, they wouldn't even bother coming. But since they are here, because they are their men, so they have an authority. So we see they have opulence like the Lord, they have beauty like the Lord, effulgence like the Lord, fame like the Lord, power like the Lord, but they never take that as their own. And they never say to others that, yes, we are in this position, this is our right. They never take advantage of the facilities of their service. As far as the common man goes, they see a Vishnu Duta, any common person would think, yes, this is the Lord. And if they were not God conscious themselves, they could take that position. You know, Prabhupada said, conspicuously they look like the Lord. Means exactly. The only difference is the Srivatsa hair on their chest. Other than that, you cannot tell the difference. But they never say they are. They always identify themselves as the humble servant of the Lord. They never take advantage. So here we see the balance. Someone in the junior position, what is their way of behavior? What is their authority and rights? Someone in the senior position, what is their behavior? What is their authority and rights? This is called balanced. And if we approach all our activities with this balanced mood, we will ourselves become balanced by such a practice. And we will find that others will appreciate this balanced atmosphere, and they will also become balanced. Otherwise, if we just like to take one side to the left as far as possible, counteract that with something all the way to the right as far as possible, we can do that unlimited lifetimes. The acharyas bless us. You can go on chanting Hare Krishna for unlimited lifetimes and not go back to Godhead. If all you want to do is distinction after adoration of Prophet and establish yourself here in the material world. We can be the big devotee here for time immemorial. Or, if we want to officially make this, so many positions are there. Brahma is there, Indra is there, Brihaspati is there. Brihaspati, big Brahma. You know, Indra, big manager. Brahma, you know, big spiritual authority. If we want, this is available. But if we want to go back to Godhead, we have to become humble. We have to identify ourselves as servants. So the Yamadutas see themselves as servants of Yamaraj. So they're not saying, hey, why are you getting in our way? But it's, we are performing the duties given to us by Yamaraj. This is our dharma. You are obstructing our dharma. So now, is that proper? You seem to be educated persons. But they are speaking properly, but they want to know. They are inquisitive. And they also have a right to know. If they are ignorant, they have a right to be educated. But, according to Gita, that right must be exercised through submissive inquiry, which is what they're doing. And the Vishnu Dutas, they are also identifying themselves as servant of Vishnu. And they have come on the behalf of Vishnu to perform his work. And no other duty. And so this man has chanted Narayan's name, and he must go to Vaikuntha, or at least be dealt with by them. Means even he has to take birth again, it will not be through the medium of Yamaraj and his servants, but through the Lord and his servants. The Lord, directly through his servants, takes care of his devotees. Right? And he's just chanted some name that he was unaware of. He had a son named Narayan, the youngest son, naturally to be attached to, the youngest, most dependent. Right? And he's an old man, right now very old, 88 years old. Old man and little kids, they relate to each other real well. So he's naturally going to be very attached to this. And he's just saying Narayan, he couldn't care less about the four-armed farm of the Lord. Just his son. So if you add it up on the material platform, you'll say this guy's a doll. But somehow or another, the process of devotional service makes the platform of material dharma pale to the point it has no meaning. So one who knows the transcendental dharma then understands that Ajamiya is fit for the Lord's mercy. So these are the two categories. We're either following the dharma according to how Krishna has given it to us through the acharyas, and that's all the further we know, or we're following the devotional principles as given to us by the acharyas, and given to them by the Lord, and understanding what is higher. So these two choices are there for us. Otherwise, we can neglect these two and go to the forest where the uncivilized people belong. If we claim to be civilized, we must fit into one of these two categories. First, following authority, we're gentle, identifying ourselves as servants, not behaving improperly, and we're either following the path of the eternal transcendental dharma, or we are situated properly in our prescribed duties. So this is what is given here. At least this is what we are gaining from this purport. We cannot claim to say that this is what is here, because there is unlimited meanings to these purports. But this is what comes to my mind. Any questions or comments? Yes. Says in the text 29, the question was, is that which body was he chanting the Lord's name, Ajamiya? Was it in his gross body? Was it in the subtle body? Because he saw a picture of the Yamadutas are taking him out of the body. So in text 29 it says, Ajamiya then saw three awkward persons with deformed bodily features, fierce twisted faces, and hair standing erect on their bodies. With ropes in their hands, they had come to take him away to the abode of Yamaraj. When he saw them, he was extremely bewildered, and because of attachment to his child, who was playing a short distance away, Ajamiya began to call him loudly by his name. Thus, with tears in his eyes, he somehow or other chanted the holy name of Narayana. So this is before they grabbed him. Because here they've forbidden him from taking him. So he was still in his gross body when he was chanting. Yes. Those two sides, okay. The question is on the two sides of the very large abysses on the two sides of the razor's edge. We have impersonalism, which means that we are we don't properly understand the Lord or the devotees. And tendency is towards jnana. But there is not so much understanding of the personal nature or feature of the devotees or the Lord. So sometimes dealings are very impersonal. Our understanding of the philosophy is impersonal. So we have to be very careful of that, because if that's not taken care of, then it can mature into advanced stages of impersonalism, where one actually thinks one becomes, you know, the Lord. Then on the other side we have Sahajism, where its sentiment becomes the more popular item. So emotion is prominent, but it is not necessarily connected to the philosophy, just we feel like it. So if this is not what we are doing, is not in line with the Shastra, then we generally see that this is Sahaja. Means that advanced devotees, we understand spontaneous devotional service means when we with feeling perform devotional activities, but that is also backed by the scriptures and by the knowledge, so we know what we're doing. In other words, in knowledge we're doing something we like to do. Otherwise we're doing something that we know we should do. In knowledge we're doing something we should do, or in knowledge we're doing something we like to do. But in both cases it's knowledge. Therefore jnana and vairag. Prabhupada always makes this point, jnana and vairag. That in knowledge we are performing our activities without material desire. So this is the two sides. So we have to be very, very careful of these. That we just either feel like it, but we can't really back it by scripture, but we just know in our heart of hearts. Let's say we've heard, don't remember. That's one thing, and then someone points it out, then we accept that. But what I'm talking about is even someone points it out, we don't want to accept the Shastra side. Our feelings are more important than even Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. See, so in both ways, impersonalism and this Sahajya, we ourselves become, our own mind and intelligence becomes the center of focus of our activities. When it's more the intelligence uses the mind, then it's impersonalism. When the mind uses the intelligence, then it's Sahajya. So the mind may have feelings, and then it uses the intelligence to rationalize. While the other is we have our shlokas, and then the mind accepts because of some prestige. Oh, I am very elevated and very advanced, or I have this opinion or understanding no one else has. I understand no one else does. So then these aspects come up. So one is passion, one is ignorance. So they both come back to envy and attachment. Envy creates impersonalism, attachment creates sahaja. So they're essential, fundamental causes of our bondage in the material world. So we always have to be careful. Just they come under different guises, you know. Sometimes we talk about impersonalism and sahajya, sometimes envy and attachment, sometimes fear and material desire. So it's many, many different ways we discuss these same points. So,
thing also. Yes.
All right, can you clarify the two points you made about one who's properly situated and telling prescribed duties or telling transcendental?
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay.
Very nice point. Is Jamasri Prabhu is asking about clarifying the two positions of performance of prescribed duties or being situated in the transcendental platform. So these are the two platforms that are considered pious. Anything other than this is considered impious. If we are performing prescribed duties, then that's materially pious. If we're performing devotional duties, that's transcendentally pious. Therefore, the conversation will come up between the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas. Is you're talking dharma, but what's the real dharma? So the Yamadutas are professing the material dharma, and the Vishnudutas are professing the transcendental dharma. Now, so they're two different dharmas that have two different platforms of existence. But they are very closely connected, because the activities of dharma, the material world, are the reflections of the transcendental activities of piety. But because people in the material world like to be materialistic and not be God conscious, but at the same time be pious, means there's, you have people who are absorbed in the mode of ignorance. Some are absorbed in passion, some in goodness, and then so many mixes of this. So because of this, then they must get these different options for pious and impious activities. You know, karma, jnana, and yoga. Or just sinful activities. And they must get this opportunity without having to think one moment about God. Because that's what they want. So the pious activities are given to those in material consciousness through these scriptures, through the Dharma Shastras, so that they will follow a pious life and not disturb other people. See, that's the Yamaduta's point. They are wondering, is why you're disturbing us. You seem to be gentle, educated, trained people, but you are disturbing our performance of prescribed duties. So what is that? Why this is going on? So they're bewildered. So the allowance is there. But for those who are actually educated, they understand the transcendental dharma is the real thing. Transcendental means whatever is done for the Lord. Therefore, these same pious activities are done for the Lord. That's the real dharma. That's the actual dharma. So now in the material dharma, then Ajamiyo, so much sin is there, and okay, he chanted the Lord's name a few times, but that's only because his son was named that, and it was only an attachment for his son, it had nothing to do with God. So from the material platform, one would consider, okay, it's a little bit of piety, named his son Narayan instead of, you know, some Jack the Ripper or something like that. But it doesn't, so what? Look at this ocean of sin compared to a small amount of pious activity. But what the Vishnudutas are pointing out, that is like somebody saying, look at this huge mountain of sand, and on this side you're putting one diamond, and you're saying that this diamond is more valuable than this whole huge mountain of sand? So that is the difference. It's a different conversion rate. So what happens is that this creates a great point of bewilderment of those who follow the scriptures. It's a great point of misunderstanding. Now, someone who follows the transcendental dharma automatically follows the lower dharma, but only for the purpose of pleasing the Lord. That's why he's following it. Not because the dharma itself has substance. Material dharma has no substance. It's considered better than adharma. Like the dry cow dung and the wet cow dung. They're both stool. But the dry cow dung, you can use it, make a fire and cook something. So in the material world, for the smoothness of the material functioning, dharma or pious activity is better than adharma. Because adharma means everyone is disturbed, no one performs proper activity. It's very difficult to surrender to the Lord. Because Krishna says four kinds of pious people surrender. So those who have some faith in the Lord and want to move in that direction, approach the Lord, they surrender. So you try to create as nicely as possible an atmosphere of piety in which then out of that, out of thousands amongst men, one may approach the Lord. But now within this is you've taken those pious activities, but until they're engaged in the Lord's service, they don't actually become transcendental. Then they become substance. So the devotees, they follow the transcendental dharma and they follow the material dharma as much as is favorable for devotional service. But if one doesn't do that, then better to follow the proper material dharma. At least he doesn't create trouble for others. But still, it is not anything overly glorious. To some degree, the Brahmins are respected, even if they're total materialists, because they have, they're situated in goodness. So even Prabhupada would respect Brahmins, material Brahmins, karmakandi Brahmins. Even Padmalocha was telling me yesterday that in 77, when Prabhupada was in Kumbh Mela, yet some distance away, there was a Mayavad sannyasi who was running an ashram there at the Kumbh Mela, and he was distributing food, free food. I think puri, sabji, like this. And they were talking very nicely. Prabhupada was very respectful to the man, and he even suggested that our devotees could come and take prasad at his place. Then we don't have to have two cookings, one for the devotees and one for food for life. We can just do the khichdi and distribute that, and the devotees can come and eat at this Swami's ashram. So he's very respectful to the sannyasis who are coming in proper lines and to the Brahmins. They're bona fide. Material, they're bona fide. But when it comes down to actual substance, then only what is transcendental does it have any meaning. But within the material realm, then yes, pious is better than impious. So this becomes the great dilemma. But as we see, Krishna in Gita tells Arjuna that you should follow the dharma anyway. Sets proper example. Because only the devotee cannot perform the dharma and still be transcendentally situated. Yes?
There is a phenomenon in our history of the movement where dharmic activities were passed off as transcendental engagement. And really,
yes.
So it seems like there's some instances in Vaishnava history where this actually there's some validity. Which I think Ramanuja's disciples, they were trying to establish a temple and they violated material dharma in a pretty substantial way. But it seems that in ISKCON, many devotees tried to catch the big fish but got wet.
Got swallowed by the fish.
So I'm wondering now if there's a correlation.
Yeah. That's
like the fish from Bhagavad Gita. The
form
of the dharma. But in another instance, you want to do this spiritual.
Yes. So Masi Prabhu is taking a step further that in the dharma and adharma, then we see that sometimes devotees within our movement have sometimes, seemingly breached points of dharma for Krishna's service. And this has created so much havoc. At the same time, we see the principle is not unestablished or unsupported,
unprecedented.
Because we see that those in the line of Ramanuja, I think it was Tirumangai Alvar especially, he was the Lord's sword. He was the personification of the Lord's sword, Tirumangai, right? The god. So then he built, I think, the main wall around the temple. It means the third wall from the inside, which is the main temple complex. Very thick, big wall. So he had one devotee who could walk on water, one who could hide in his own shadow, one who could open any lock, like this. So they used to do many activities to collect funds to build this temple wall. But we see that after they were finished with their service, then Tirumangai didn't leave them. Then when he was sending all the mistries, all the laborers who had built the wall, and they were saying, hey, you haven't paid us. You know, it means, in other words, they paid for the materials, but they didn't pay for the labor. So after then, they got a very large boat that says, well, we don't keep the money here. You know, it's too much money. We keep it out on this island. You know, so we have to go to there. So they put all these 300 people in the boat. And I think also the guys that were the thieves. And the one who could walk on water. And they all went out into the deep into the Kabari. I think it was during rainy season, so it was very high. Then the one who could walk on water pulled the cork on the boat. There was a stopper, and the boat sank. So then the children of the mysteries of they came to Ramanuja and Tirumangai and asked, well, what's happened to our parents? You know, you were taken to the island to pay them and all that. And he says, yeah, I paid them. He says, well, we may have paid them, but we don't see them. He says, no, I paid them very well, like that. And he says, well, what did you pay them? He says, I sent them back to Godhead. So then, I'm not sure if it was that they themselves came and for our forms and said, we're fine, don't worry about us, or Runganji himself, the deity, said, yes, they're all back. I think he said, yeah, they're all with him, and they could see them all there with the Lord. And he also sent those ones that would do all kinds of nefarious activities. I think Madhu also had a crew like that he got rid of. So it's like there may be time, place, and circumstance where sometimes something that is seemingly not so proper may be applied. But if one can't tell, doesn't have the discrimination to understand that time, place, and circumstance, then one cannot continue with those things, or one should not be allowed, or one should be removed from that position. Because the main element that we see here is that the Yamadutas always saw themselves and the Vishnudutas as servants of the Lord, and they were humble. Well, generally, if you check very carefully, that in those situations where devotees were following something that was not proper, you will find that in the beginning it may have worked because of their innocence, because of their submission, because of that actual proper identification as servant. And according to the time, place, and circumstance, there was not much other alternative. But as things developed in that, it was taken as an easy way to do things. And then someone is very strong, adamant, and very proud of their position and all these different things. And that's when the problem started. Not generally in the beginning, when it may have had some validity for whatever short time it was there. So that's, in that way, you'll see that. So in other words, the understanding of dharma can only be understood from the principle of devotional activities. And one who can see both can deal with both. Otherwise, one should situate oneself in prescribed duties and perform devotional activities and not veer too far from that. But someone who may be more situated may see occasions. Because the Dharma Shastra itself gives, just like one should not lie. But if it will save your life, the Dharma Shastra says there's no problem in lying. Right? Save your life, save someone else's life. You can lie. It's not against the rules of Shastra. No? Because Yudhishthira was a matter of prestige. He had never once told a lie, so that was very prestigious. So he still didn't want to break that position. Because once you've told a lie, whether you've told one or you've told ten, there's not much difference. You've never told any, that's very prestigious. So he was attached to that position.
It seems that by engaging in purely dharmic activities, even though initially the intention might be proper, that it becomes, the devotees have become contaminated by that. It's led to the
depends on the position. Janmasi is making the point that one may engage in adharmic activities, but one may become contaminated by such activities. So especially the kanistha has this problem. The prescribed duties are specifically for the kanistha, because the kanistha very much easily gets deterred by the mind, because passion and ignorance are there. And in passion or ignorance, you can't really tell what's dharma, what's not, or you get them mixed up. While in goodness, you can tell very clearly. So it means when one's situated nicely in knowledge, one generally is not bewildered. So the pancharatric system of rules and regulations and the prescribed duties, these things are specifically very strongly meant for the kanistha, because it keeps them from going out of line. So generally we see that only in relationship to the preacher, sometimes these things may be done, but that's for the madhya. So if one's not situated on that platform, one has to be very, very careful. One has to be very careful. Otherwise, like you pointed out, they may become contaminated by those activities and fall from their position or make some trouble. Like that. Because the madhyama can tell what is the difference and how long it's good for. Because everything has its time. Like an expert knows how long to use one technique. Like if you're doing anything, there's technique. And you can't use the same technique in every situation. As someone who's expert knows when to change technique. Prabhupada gives the example of the story of the veterinarian and his assistant. You know that story with the horse? And there was a big lump in his throat, and the veterinarian looked in the horse's mouth and took out a big hammer, hit the horse in the throat. And then the horse jumped a bit and then became okay and fine. So then the assistant thought, well, that's pretty easy. You know, so then he decided to open his own practice. So he bought himself a hammer. Then anytime horses had lumps in the throat, he would go there and then take out his hammer and smack the horse in the throat. And unfortunately, the horse would keep dying. And then people would get upset. And then he would say, no, but I've been trained by this person. So enough of these situations happened that the people went to the veterinarian and said, what is this? You have this so-called student of yours says that he's learned this from you. You use this technique. You know, and he's killing our horses. You know, what's going on here? And so he explained, yes, I used this technique once. Somebody came with their horse and it had a big lump in its throat. I looked inside its mouth and the poor horse had tried to swallow a watermelon whole. So it couldn't swallow it, so I took a hammer and smashed it, the watermelon broke, and the horse swallowed it. But these other lumps that the horses were having were not watermelons, they were actually some disease. So therefore, unless one actually knows what one's doing, one has to be very careful. So it may not be a common practice to take a hammer and whack a horse in the throat. It may have its situation. Like that. So one has to know how to use it in Krishna's service. Otherwise, if one uses it in one's own service, then I'm very expert or very, my position or, you know, I can, whatever it may be. One has to be very careful of that. Because then the reaction for pious things, if one is using it improperly, generally is very mild. You know, generally it's another pious birth. You know, or some, you'll get some, you know, material benefit out of it. But impious things improperly used then create a lot of problem because they're coming from the modes of passion and ignorance. So anything of passion and ignorance gives so much trouble as a reaction. So either it'll create very, you know, offenses and other things, or it'll disturb devotees so much. I think we should end here. Grantarajshima Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Jainatai Gaudapai.